The Reclamation of Salted Earth, an Avatar The Last Airbender fanfic, written by That Weird Guy in the Bushes, read by Dr. Fumbles McStupid. With the relationship tags, Azula and Zuko, and Iroh and Zuko, and the additional tags, Suicidal Thoughts, Zuko Angst, Protective Zuko, Character Study, Zuko Isn't Really Gay, But He Does Think Jed Is Hot, Child Abuse. They are all children. Zuko is a bit darker than canon. Religious imagery and symbolism. I read the Geneva Convention 4 times for this shit, appreciate me. Toxic mindset. Dehumanization. Excessive use of parentheses. Other additional tags to be added. No beta, we die like men. I wrote this instead of sleeping. The Big Brother Instinct. Alternate universe canon divergence. Story contains its own soundtrack, so not really a song fic, but kind of. I made Zuko a Stepford snarker, and I'm not sorry. Ozai gets what he deserves. Author loves TV tropes. Seriously, if anyone makes a TV tropes page for this, I will give them my blood. Disassociation. Zuko and Azula are toxic as hell, but what else is new? Summary. Salting the Earth. The practice of spreading salt over a conquered city to both curse it and render its soil infertile, condemning its residents to famine. Zuko is many things throughout his life. Himself is just one he never has the time for. Chapter 1. 1. Part 1. Song. Devil Town, Cave Town. Suffering Undue Hardship.
Life's alright in Devil Town. We're right. No one's gonna catch us now. Dad has bought a new car now. We're fine. No one's gonna catch us now.
Kai is the one who teaches him to cook. Maybe it should be his mother, or his father, or his uncle, or Luten. But it isn't. It is the palace chef who puts a big hand over Zuko's tiny one and shows him how to chop a vegetable. This, the young man, the very young man, though Prince Zuko doesn't realize quite how young, at 7, because everyone seems old at 7, says, is the most practical use of a knife. Then he laughs, and Prince Zuko laughs too, even though he doesn't get it. 2 weeks later, Kai leaves to join the army. He will not come back. But Prince Zuko doesn't know that yet. He cries about it a lot until Azula tells him that it'll be fine. She even hugs him, which she never does, so he knows it's special, and he believes her. Two. 1 year later, Prince Zuko is out with Uncle when his eyes linger long, too long, on a set of dowel blades in a shop window. He stares because they're pretty, and the handles look well-crafted, and he just wants to touch one of them and see how it feels. Uncle notices him looking, and then buys him the swords, because Uncle is nice and generous and an idiot. An idiot because Prince Zuko knows he will get in trouble for this. Knows because... what if I fought with a knife? And physical weapons are only for non-bending weaklings. And red burn marks that don't fade quickly enough. And lets Uncle buy them anyway. He can hide them, he thinks. And he does. Three. He swings them around in the training room when he's sure nobody else is around, and hides them under his bed when he isn't. He likes it more than bending, which he doesn't want to admit. It's a little like dancing, to Prince Zuko at least, because it's smooth and controlled and never anything bigger than it has to be. Prince Zuko doesn't have anyone to fight, so he just creates enemies in his head. It's a bit more fun like that, he thinks. Azula finds him practicing one day, and he makes her swear not to tell anyone, crying for good measure, and she lies and says she won't. She doesn't tell Dad, at least, but she does tell Mom. Mom confronts him about it later that night, demanding, with a tapping foot, that he explain, and he does. He tells her he only hid them because he thought Father would be mad, and she hugs him and promises that he can train whenever he wants, that she won't let his dad punish him for it as long as she's around, and then sings him to sleep with the sound of Torrance. She talks about it to Uncle, who signs him up for lessons with Piando. Piando is a lot of things where most people are very little, but Prince Zuko likes him anyway. He is a strict teacher, which Prince Zuko is used to, but he also gives Prince Zuko ointment for the burns he comes to lessons with and never explains. He doesn't explain, because he knows it's just a normal thing that parents do to their kids sometimes, and also because Piando always looks like he probably knows anyway. Piando never gives him more praise than, better than last time. But when he talks to Mother and he thinks Prince Zuko isn't listening, but Prince Zuko is listening because it's become his favorite thing to do, sneak around the temple and see how long it takes for someone to spot him, and then when they do, insist that they help him get better until they can't spot him at all. He calls Prince Zuko a prodigy and one of the best students. Prince Zuko doesn't stop smiling for the longest time. One night, there is a particularly horrible storm, and Prince Zuko is forced to stay at the temple. He watches the lightning from inside with an entranced look. It's very pretty. Piando makes dinner, and they sit on mats and eat while talking about how Prince Zuko's training is going. Then, that conversation derails, when Prince Zuko makes a joke about how Piando looks the villain from the play Love Amongst the Dragons, which he does, and Piando makes threats about tomorrow's training and curses good-naturedly, while Prince Zuko laughs and he thinks it is the happiest he's been in a long time. He almost asks if he can stay with Piando. He doesn't. Four. Lessons with Piando make bending practice so dull it is nearly unbearable. Prince Zuko has hardly improved, and it keeps him up at night, tossing and turning and wondering when it will all crash down. The answer, it turns out, is 2 months after the incident with the storm. His father is disappointed, Mother tells him. He needs to spend more time on his bending. He's banned from practice with his Dao until he's better, until he is more. When Prince Zuko hears about it, he runs out into the garden and curls up underneath the branches of a tree until Azula manages to. Are you really going to stay there all night? Maybe I am. You're an idiot. You'll freeze to death. And if that doesn't kill you, Dad will. Silence. Come on already. I'm getting cold. Just come inside. More silence. Ugh, fine. Please come inside. Coax him out. Five. When Luten dies, everything shifts. All the foundations that were supposed to hold things together move, lurch forward and farther out of place. Things change. Iroh stays, but he is different. Ozai is Fire Lord, and he is different too. Luten is the same, but he is gone, away, smoke, destroyed in a funeral pyre that burned longer than it should have, dead, gone. And Mom is gone, in a different way. Not dead, just suddenly unconstant. His sister's different, too. Darker in a way that Prince Zuko doesn't like to think about. Her face has more shadows than it used to. He can sneak past everyone in the castle but her. I 6. When Prince Zuko is 11 years old, he breaks his arm. Well, that's the story he feeds his uncle when he asks Prince Zuko what happened. He says specifically, "I broke my arm," even though the "I" doesn't really belong there. In reality, his father broke his arm. But his father did it because Prince Zuko was practicing with his Dao when he shouldn't have been, and he's not good enough at firebending to have other interests yet, so maybe the "I" is not so out of place, really. Azula thinks so, at least. And Azula is father's favorite. And she's father's favorite because she's smart. And because she's smart, she's probably right. So he believes her. 1 year ago, his mother became gone. Azula says she's not coming back. And Prince Zuko believes her, except for when he doesn't.
Devil Town is colder in the summertime. I'll lose my mind at least another 1,000 times. Hold my hand tight. We'll make it another night. I still get a little scared of something new, but I feel a little safer when I'm with you. Falling doesn't feel so bad when I know you're falling with me too.
7. Prince Zuko is angrier these days. It's not very noticeable on the outside, but on the inside, every wrong move makes him boil, like there's molten acid in his chest, eating through his ribcage all the time. But he can't tell anyone about it because it's already swallowed his lungs. He tries to push the acid down into his stomach, but all that does is make him feel empty, tired, sad, and unable to eat. So he chooses to let it fester instead. He tries not to yell too much, even though he's mad. He's afraid opening his mouth that big will let people see how rotten everything is on the inside. When he's 13, Prince Zuko almost makes it out of a war meeting alive. There's a lot less making it out, and a lot more almost, than he'd like to admit, though. The thing is that he is so angry, angry in the way that only young people can be, where it fills you to the brim and will travel up your esophagus and choke you if you do not sing with it, if you are not ripping at the seams with wrath at every moment. He looks around at these old men, who were once young men, and wonders if they have felt rage this way. He cannot comprehend a life where one is not angry. The only way he can imagine anyone being anything but outraged is if they are not paying attention. Azula proves him wrong when she cheers in the stands as he begs on his knees for his father's forgiveness. She is not angry, and she is paying very close attention. He barely remembers her, though, by the time his father has grabbed his hair in one hand and seared a hole inside him with the other. Everything burns so horrifically bright, moving in slow motion. His father reaching out as though to brush away his tears as he is cradled almost gently by a hand bigger and stronger and more than his own, even as he is destroyed by the sun itself, like Agni come to take his soul. He is glad that, at the least, his eyes were closed. Eight. Prince Zuko is here, is there, is burning until he isn't. The corpse of a prince lays on the floor, and a medic carries the exile out alive.
Devil Town is colder in the summertime. I'll lose my mind at least another 1,000 times. Hold my hands high, we'll make it another night. I still get a little scared of something new, but I feel a little safer when I'm with you.
One, 10 feet tall, cave town, or otherwise deprived of liberty.
Tall. I wanna grow big red horns, fingers covered in thorns that pierce everything. I wanna be 10 feet tall, I wanna eat fire and
Uncle Iroh is the one who takes him. Iroh, when things are said and done, and over and burning in the middle of the arena, takes him away. Wraps him up when he wakes, tense and frozen. Pleas for forgiveness dancing on his tongue with burning feet. Feeds him when his whole body is bubbling, and his stomach is too unsteady for food, even though he needs it. Cleans his wound and puts bandages around it when the exile's hands shake too greatly for him to do it himself. Stays, even when reminded that he is holding and feeding and healing a failure. Stays when that failure stops being a failure and starts being a disgrace. Refuses to leave, even when the exile tells him to. Uncle is sitting at his bedside when a servant says that he can return if he captures the Avatar. Uncle gets a look of anger and pity on his face, but the exile's head is too busy spinning with the prospect of redemption. "I can do it," he tells Uncle. Uncle doesn't look like he believes him, but the exile doesn't care, because he can go home. Maybe someday. Hopefully. The exile hears a lot more than people think he does. The nurses all whisper it's a fool's errand, and he's the only one who can't see it. He'll show them, though. He is too angry to ever stop moving. He gets a ship. He gets a tiny ship and a crew of bastards no one else wanted, and the disadvantage just makes his blood hotter. They can try to throw him to the wolves all they want, he decides. He's going to fucking eat them alive. The first time he sees himself without the bandages, he throws the mirror against the wall. It shatters on the ground and the shards reflect the ceiling, staring back at him as if to ask why he did that. He brings his hands up and digs his nails into his collarbones, dragging them over the skin to try and bring back sensation in his body. He feels revolt and disgust shudder through him from the center of his chest, making him nauseous. He looks like a monster. Then, his nails catch on his skin, and he is brought back to Earth. Fine. Fine. The exile can be a monster. He can be evil and cruel and angry if that's what he has to be. When he walks outside his cabin without the bandages, Captain G stares with tiny pupils. What? The exile snaps. He's already regretting this, but he holds his head as high as he can anyways. He can't cower for anyone. Giving in has never gotten him anything except hurt. Nothing, sir. G gets a look of approval, just a bit, before turning away. Good! He almost yells, but it doesn't feel right. He yells a lot more now, these days. He is not as afraid of people seeing down his throat anymore. He wants them to be scared of him.
I want to collect swords, stab my walls when I'm bored. Wear clothes made of old socks, which are missing their pairs. I wanna be 10 feet tall. I wanna eat fire and snow. I wanna scare everyone.
3. They hunt the Avatar for a long time. The exile gets older during that long time, and he grows into his scar rather than out of it. He tries to be the type of person people look at him and expect him to be, because that's a lot easier than anything else. The first time he meets Captain Zhao, he's 14. That's almost a lie. They met once when the exile was 11, but Zhao was all honeyed words and saccharine smiles, so it was more like meeting his desire for a promotion. Zhao looks down at him, forms his lips up into a sneer, and says, "You'll never find the Avatar." The exile looks up at Zhao, triple his age, triple his status, triple his monster, makes his best expression of disinterest, and replies, "Fucking watch me!" Zhao slips and turns furious. The exile feels only the faintest flicker of fear, even though Zhao could probably kill him, because he's not a prince anymore, because the exile would like to see him try. Zhao doesn't say anything. He walks away. It feels good to control this.
Climb over the circus walls, finally feel it. Cotton candy floors, haunted houses, ghosts. I wanna feed the ducks, I wanna eat some stones. Sink down to the bed, finally feel out.
Five. He buys the blue spirit mask on a whim. He's looking through the market stalls, and his eyes catch on it, and he remembers his mother's stories about it, and then he just kind of has to. He stuffs it under his bed like he did with his swords. He's probably not going to wear it. But he does. He does, he does. And the worst part is that he never regrets it. Six. A year later, the exile finds the Avatar. They're sailing through the South Pole when he sees a light, and he just knows what it is. He's so homesick that a viper warps around his lungs as soon as he sees it, because he's going home! He's going home! He's going home! And the Avatar is there. As the exile watches him fly away with two water tribe brats, he's frozen solid because the Avatar is a child. The Avatar is a child. The Avatar is a child. Then he shakes himself. It doesn't matter. And it does. It does. It does.
I tell them piece by piece, but I don't care enough. First set of 33, now I wanna be 10.
Seven. The exile meets Zhao again. And this time no one walks away. They duel, and the exile wins. And Uncle calls him honorable, which he isn't. He isn't. He isn't! Zhao calls him a coward, which he is. He is. He is. Because the Avatar is a child. He chases the Avatar anyway. He's never wanted anything more than home.
Now I wanna be 10 feet tall.
Eight. The exile burns down Kyoshi Island. He burns it because he's angry, and he's homesick, and all of them are children, but he can't admit that yet, because that would make it true, and the exile doesn't want to be a child anymore. He wants to be older, so this can be easier, because hurting kids is just something adults do sometimes. But he can't do it, and he wishes he could, because that would make him so much less. He doesn't like being so many things when most people are so little. He doesn't know how Pian Dao did it. He wishes he was just angry, instead of whatever the hell he is now.
Be 10 feet tall, I wanna grow big red horns, fingers covered in thorns that pierce everything. I wanna be 10 feet tall, I wanna eat fire and snow, I wanna scare everyone.
1. Werewolf gimmick, the mountain goats. Method or means of combat.
I was not there for rehearsal. I don't need it anymore. When I show up just in time to pop, you can clear the goddamn floor. Empty out the locker room. Let me find my space. Let him who thinks he knows no fear look well upon my face.
The blue spirit breaks into Pohai's stronghold. Before he does, though, he leaves the exile behind, slips on a mask, and becomes someone else, just temporarily. The exile didn't die in the process, though. He doesn't die. He just suddenly becomes unconstant. The blue spirit grabs a bucket of water, because the blue spirit isn't a bender. Then he creeps into Pohai's stronghold on a carriage, and he breaks out the avatar. The blue spirit and the avatar make a good team. Not good enough, though, because the blue spirit gets hit by an arrow, and when he wakes up, his mask is gone, and he is just the exile. The avatar looks at him sadly and asks if they could have been friends. The exile thinks the fireball is response enough. It isn't, though, because if it was, then the exile would stop thinking about it.
Upon my face, nameless bodies, in unremembered rooms, know how a man becomes a beast when the wolfbane blooms.
9. 10 feet tall, cave town.
I wanna be 10 feet tall, I wanna grow big red horns.
Zhao takes his crew.
Horns, fingers covered in thorns that pierce everything. I wanna be 10 feet tall. I wanna eat fire and snow. I wanna scare everyone.
10. Zhao blows up his ship. Zhao blows up his ship! That insignificant little bitch blows up the exile's ship and tries to murder him, and he almost does it. The exile is buried beneath debris and oil and the weight of water on his clothes. But he pulls himself out because he refuses to die here. He refuses to let Zhao be the one who kills him because Zhao is raiding the North Pole and the exile isn't fucking done yet. He almost leaves the exile behind, almost thinks about getting out of the water as someone new. But he doesn't. Instead, he pulls out the heavy and waterlogged corpse of his body, drags it with him when it starts floating downstream, and in his head, he screams at it, "You are not allowed to give up on me," he says as he hauls it to the shore. "I'm not fucking done yet." His swords are gone, and so is his mask. He does not have a body to crawl back to. The exile coughs up water on land, coughs up a bit of his lungs too. And then Uncle Iroh finds him. Uncle tells him he should stop and rest, but Uncle has been telling him to do that for years, and the exile never has, and he definitely can't do it now because he isn't done enough to stop moving yet. The exile can't stop because he's not dead, and if he's not dead, then he's not done, and if he's not done, that means he still has work to do. He is terribly tired.
I want to collect swords, stab my walls when I'm bored. Wear clothes made of old socks, which are missing their pairs. I wanna be 10 feet tall, I wanna eat fire and snow. I wanna scare everyone.
11. The exile sneaks on Zhao's ship. It's not that hard, really. Zhao should update his security, and maybe get more familiar with his crew. The exile would have been able to tell immediately if one of his was an imposter. Probably. He sneaks onto Zhao's ship, and then he sneaks off it. But before he does, Uncle talks to him and says, "Ever since my son died, I think of you as my own. A lot of things. Mostly about safety, which the exile remembers for all of 5 minutes, before he watches some animals he's never seen before disappearing into a hole in the ice. They have to come up for air somewhere, he supposes as he jumps in. He's an idiot, he supposes 10 minutes later, gasping and coughing up ice-cold water that chills him down to his center. He captures the Avatar, though, so that whole business of near-death hardly matters. Then, something bubbles up to the surface, and he ends up monologuing to an unconscious 12-year-old about how shitty everything is because everything is shitty, and the exile is pretty sure he has broken a rib somewhere in there. But he can't stop, because he doesn't have time, and he needs it all to leave his chest before he explodes. It doesn't make any of the pressure let up, but the exile's starting to think that's just how things are with him. He passes out sometime around there, and when he wakes up, he's on the back of the Avatar's bison. Lovely. He slips away while they're talking, and runs after Zhao, because that fucker needs to know he's a failure. He doesn't think he's going to kill Zhao, because he likes to think he isn't that kind of person. He doesn't kill Zhao. Zhao dies anyway. It's not the exile's fault, at least. That hardly makes it any better.
Climb over the circus walls, finally feel it. Cotton candy floss, haunted houses, ghosts. I wanna feed the ducks, I wanna eat some stuff.
12. The exile meets up with Uncle, and they float out of the North Pole on a raft. The exile is tired, but then he stops being tired and starts being scared, because he thought the Avatar was a pacifist. That doesn't change the bodies they float past on their way out. Uncle is asleep through most of it, which the exile is glad about, because Uncle might be older and might not need his protection, but the exile still doesn't want him to see this. Uncle thinks he's asleep, too, right now. But really, he's sitting up, knees pulled to his chest and nails scraping across his collarbones. Only, he does it until there's blood running down his chest and trapped beneath his fingernails, and he's still not back to Earth. He's still scanning the bodies for the faces of people he knows, and he knows a lot of them. Before, when he was stressed or worried or too angry to talk to anyone without setting the room on fire, the exile would go into the kitchen and float around while his hands were busy with the most practical application of a knife. One time, the cook, Akihaki, caught him, and the exile made him swear not to tell anyone. Nobody whispered about it when they thought he wasn't looking, so he always assumed the promise was kept. Akihaki always smiled about it when the exile asked, laughed a little and brushed it off, said he was the same way as a kid, embarrassed about it, at least until he met his husband, who couldn't cook to save his life, and would wax poetic about the food for days. He sees Akihaki's face in the water, dead-eyed and puffy. He tries not to think about it. He wants to shed his body so he can leave this behind, like he left behind the burning corpse of a prince 2 years ago. But his skin clings to him no matter how much he tries to rip it off, stubborn and immovable. His lungs shrink. His mouth tastes like salt. He thinks he's going to die here. Vaguely, he wants to die here. But he never gets what he wants, so he won't. He hears Uncle stirring, and he relaxes his body. They have floated past the waterlogged corpses, mostly, so the exile tries to build himself bigger, even though he feels small enough to fall through the cracks in the raft. Hey, Uncle. The exile keeps his voice calm. He's willing to float down into the depths of the ocean, but he isn't willing to watch Uncle do the same, so he'll save them both if that's what he has to do. He hates Uncle sometimes, but he doesn't have anyone else.
Sink down to the bed, finally feel out.
He meets Azula again. He thinks she's welcoming him home, but then it turns out she isn't, because of course she isn't, because Azula is a liar. She kills the exile with a lightning bolt that doesn't hit. He gathers everything he does not want to leave with its corpse and runs from her like he has for as long as she has chased him. The traitor cuts off his phoenix tail and is reborn. One, Saint Bernard, Lincoln. To whichever party they belong.
Hung pictures of patron saints up on my wall to remind me that I am a fool. Tell me where I came from, what I will always be, just a spoiled little kid who went to Catholic school.
The Earth Kingdom is something different, and yet something very familiar all at once. The traitor and his uncle are wandering for only a few days. He has forgotten what it feels like to grow hair on his head when he has not for so long. It makes the scar look less, he has found, and he has always tried to make it exactly what it is, even when he doesn't want to. When Uncle manages to poison himself, he is healed by a pretty young girl named Song. She asks him what his name is, and he lies and says it's Lee. She asks him where his father is, and he lies and says at war. She tells him about her scars, and he lies to himself and says that it is a price worth paying. He steals her ostrich horse in an attempt to grow into a bigger monster's skin. It does not do anything but make him feel very sick, and very afraid, and very, very alone.
When I'm dead, I won't join their ranks, 'cause they are both holy and free. And I'm in Ohio, satanic and chained up, and until the end, that's how it'll be.
Two. The traitor and his uncle beg for coin on scorched Earth Kingdom stone. The traitor bubbles with venom as he watches his uncle dance for a single piece of gold. The Tao blades the man who humiliates him holds glitter in the harsh sunlight.
I said, make me love myself so that I might love you. Don't make me a liar, 'cause I swear to God, when I said it, I thought it was true.
One. Body, mother, mother. Consequent severe losses.
Take my eyes, take them aside. Take my face and desecrate my arms and legs. They get in the way. Take my hands, they'll understand. Take my heart, pull it apart. And take my brain, or what remains, and throw it all away. 'Cause I've grown tired.
The blue spirit steals a new face that night, from an abandoned cart of theater masks. He takes it as a sign. The man's swords are taken with ease. He misses the freedom this body entailed. Two. He steals again. Three, and again.
Take the ears, take them and disappear, and take my joints, take them for points, take my teeth, tear through my cheeks, and take.
Four, he steals from a young couple who deserves the food more than he does, because the blue spirit is not a good person. Uncle doesn't say anything, but the way he looks at his nephew, all sad and hooded and disappointed, gives the impression that he knows anyway. Three, Saint Bernard.
Saint Calvin told me not to worry about you, but he's got his own things to deal with. There's really just one thing that we have in common. Neither of us will be missed.
The traitor leaves Uncle behind. He walks away from the only person who has ever cared for him without conditions, because he is not a good person, no matter what skin he is wearing.
St. Bernard sits at the top of the driveway. You always said how you love dogs. I don't know if I count, but I'm trying my best when I'm howling and barking these songs.
4. The traitor realizes that he is not a traitor when he almost dies in the Earth Kingdom desert. He isn't a traitor because he was an exile before. And to be a traitor, you have to have something to betray. He stumbles into a tiny, war-ruined town and sheds his skin, pulling himself out of the husk left behind by strength of spite alone. Lee is dragged from the ashes of his previous human, with the screams of a sinner pleading, his throat dry, on his knees, begging a priest, a father, a god, for absolution. An Earth Kingdom soldier takes his food and rides away, kicking dust into Lee's face, and when he spits out the conquered, salted earth, it hits the ground like a refusal.